Riley Martin has been kind enough to extend his time here with us because we didn't get to all the calls for him last hour. So Dale, Aaron, and Jim have decided to hang on, and so will Riley Martin. Also coming up then, we'll go to open lines for the rest of the hour. But hang on, Dale, Aaron, and Jim, three callers we didn't get to, but we will get to them next for Riley Martin on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, Dale, Aaron, and Jim are patient men to wait to get through to Riley Martin, and thanks for hanging over, guys. Let's start east of the Rockies for Dale and Riley Martin. You can find out more at him at coasttocoastam.com by linking up to his websites. Hey, Dale.
Good morning.
You're talking to Riley Martin.
Good morning, guys. Sorry if I'm going to ask you a question that's already been answered. How do you play the discs that are given to you from the aliens?
That's a really good question. You get these dream discs from the Biavians. What do you do with it?
Well, beside your bed, there is a little, looks like a globular of a shaky plastic, like Jell-O or something like that. All you got to do is put the disc, just lay it there, and then the dream will manifest itself in the air, like in the ether around you, so you can see it like that.
So it doesn't replay in your brain?
No.
Like a dream?
But you will remember what you forgot. And if you keep doing that, then you'll get good at it. And then you'll be able to maybe engineer your own dreams.
Okay. By doing what?
By knowing when the monster that jumped you is going to try and do it again. If you go back through the same elementals, you say, oh, there's a monster around that corner. Hey, monster, I know you're there, but you got no action. And the monster would just snap his fingers and say, damn.
Okay, cool. All right. Let's go west of the Rockies for Aaron on Coast to Coast AM. Aaron?
Hi. I'm calling from Santa Rosa, California.
Hello, Aaron.
Hi, Riley. Hey, when I was about 5 years old, I thought I saw a UFO. And if I describe it to you, could you tell me if you've seen a ship like that before?
Okay.
Now, I was playing in the street, and it was like nearing sunset, and I looked up, and I saw, and I don't know how else to describe it other than it looked like the sun came out of the sky. It was like a giant glowing golden orb, like a sphere. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a ship like that in travel?
They call these amber probes. These ships are literally unmanned. They are information gatherers. They are able to send out light probes that may come bouncing down the road or anything into your room in order to gather information and what have you. They are light probes that are on a mission or vector and what have you. If you saw it, then that may mean that you are of some interest to them, if it lingered long enough for you to check it out, you know?
Tell me what you mean by that, that you were of interest to them, that they were watching, the amber probes were watching Aaron, for example, because he was of interest to them. What would make somebody of interest to them?
Oh, well, my goodness, well, how am I to know? Perhaps it's genetics. Perhaps it's the inner etheric value of his spirit. Perhaps it is his concepts. Perhaps it is his emotional content. Perhaps it is his ability to love, or okay, what have you. But they decide to check him out, you know?
Okay. First-time caller line, our last caller for Riley Martin. But thank you, Jim, for hanging on, and Riley for answering on Coast to Coast AM. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, Riley. This is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, it's Just had a quick question. I was wondering if there was anything we as individuals, you know, all the listeners, could do to stop or even help any of the stuff that's coming, all the bad stuff and all that.
Yeah. Jim,
yeah.
Remember this. There is no such thing as a negative. Everything has a force. Love has a force. Hatred has a force. And it goes out. And for every force, there's an equal and opposite counterforce. What I'm saying is that if we should wish for a better world, somebody is listening out there. If we would do a kind deed, give a smile, a couple of bucks, a helping hand, a compliment, and what have you, all of this adds up in the ether of all things. What if we all tomorrow decided to be decent? The world would change overnight, period. You understand? So, yes. Now, remember this. All of our philosophies, the basis for our sciences, our religions, and things of this nature, has come from a handful of people down through history. We may have built upon it and used it to our advantage and what have you, but only a handful started the whole thing, so you can change the world.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Now, what do you, other than publish the book, The Coming of Tan, and the website, thecomingoftan.com, what else do you do?
I'm an excellent musician. You ought to get my album. I'll be jamming, man.
You be jamming.
You should look at the symbols, the circular symbolic configurations on the website. They are totally magnificent and not of this earth, and they are imbued with great powers and things of this nature. Get your symbol. That's your ticket out of here, kid, if necessary.
All right, but we'll go to open lines here coming up. But before we go, I want to ask you honestly though. During the week, I mean, and you're a professional musician, and on the albums.
I don't have the time now to travel the road and do concerts and all that. But if you want to get my album, go to the website.
Cool.
Comingoftan.com.
Right.
You can order it.
Okay. And what kind of music is it?
It's everything from oldie and goodies, spirituals, reggae, blues, the whole smoke. See, I came from a time when people actually sung songs instead of running their mouths.
Well, I think we share that same background, but I mean, it doesn't mean I don't enjoy some rap, which I'm assuming you're.
Well, sure, I do too, but yeah, don't give it to me out of the tukas.
Yeah.
Forever, you know. Let me hear some actual singing somewhere, you know.
And
now, look here. How much time do I have left?
We got a little time.
Okay. Can I, a shout out to some people? I mean, beautiful people and stuff like that?
Sure.
Okay. Give me a minute here. All right?
Okay.
Okay. I want to give a shout out to these people whom I dearly love and who have been recording on the Neutronic computers up in the sky. Marvin and Jenny Carter, whom I love. Everett Ellicott, great and gentle spirit. Kingsley Durant, who is a great benefactor. Dave and Karen Braun, beautiful people up in Ohio, Almas and Ida Phillips. Chuck Shetler, the retired NASA scientist who first read my work and flew down to see me. Joy and Marcy. Sue Ranu, my lawyer secretary, whom I love. Slevin, Greg, and Visas, great musicians, cameramen, photographers, and what have you. Mama Ruth Long, whom I love. Margaret and Dick Woodward, out in California, beautiful people. Con Clive and Gene Henry. Officer Satch and his lovely family. Tony McGettigan, Dave and Sharon in Dallas, Ike Rary, who is a generous man, Commander Graham Bethune, Strategic Air Command, retired, who has confirmed much of my theorems. Victor Hiawatha, Helen Tyombi, and Abina, my loved ones. Eve Kerwin, a white buffalo woman. Veronica Hard in Connecticut. And Dr. Abel Smith and the lovely Mary out in Oklahoma. And I hope that I haven't taken up all your time.
Not at all. Well, and when does your show get started then on with Howard Stern?
It should be sometime after the first of the year. Howard will come on the air personally around the 9th of January.
And then...
it should be sometime close to then. Now, I'm also doing a show out of Ohio, Computer Access, called Artist First, A-R-T-I-S-T, F-R-R-S-T. And you can find that if you go to my website, thecomingoftan.com, tan like suntan, thecomingoftan.com. You can find that. And it'll turn you on to that.
And will this be something you'll do in studio and then take calls, or you'll be on the phone, or
satellite, Sirius satellite? I'll do in the studio.
Okay.
In real time.
Very interesting.
Others I may do from a distance, as I'm doing with you, Ian. You are a marvelous young man, very intelligent, very challenging, and
Thank you.
Admire intellect.
Well,
I want to be questioned.
Good.
You know
and
what I mean?
I appreciate that, because it wouldn't be fair for me to you to treat you anything other than less than what you deserve. And in this case, that is you're proposing some very mind expanding ideas and experiences, and it would only be right for me to stay with you and try to understand exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. In leaving you, I will say, the fusion reaction burns at a medium temperature of roughly 200 million degrees Fahrenheit. It's not like jet propulsion. It generates the gigawatts of electromagnetic flux that feeds out into super cold diodes that in turn feeds into the anti-gravity buffers and into the vibrators that generates an electromagnetic bubble around the ship. By manipulating the electromagnetic poles, they are able to move back and forth, up and down, through space and time. Okay?
Very good. Thank you so much for that explanation, and best luck in these endeavors of 2006.
Cool. And, hey, man, we got to do this again sometime. You're a beautiful guy. I mean, I really love you, man.
I would enjoy that update. Thank you very much, Mr. Martin, and have a wonderful evening.
You too.
God bless you. It's Riley Martin, and you can link up to him through coasttocoastam.com. Rest of the hour, we'll go open lines where Brad is east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Brad?
What a show, Ian.
Was interesting.
Unbelievable show tonight.
Very interesting. Thank you.
And may I suggest, I know you say that you don't have much more power than, like, say, the Albacore guy.
I'm just below the Albacore guy. The Albacore guy is just ahead of me.
Yeah. I would say, and I think I speak for a few people, what a great co-host that you would have with this man.
With Riley Martin?
Yes, sir.
Making a permanent co-host to the show.
Well, maybe not a permanent, but maybe a once-a-month kind of thing. And just wanted to say to you, Ian, first off, before I go into my question for you, but since you've been back on Saturday nights, I haven't been on Coast, listening to Coast, for maybe close to a year now. So this is the first time I've got to really get into the Ian experience.
Okay.
And I want to say, sir, I work every Saturday night. Trust me. I know that. And you make them roll right by, sir. Thank you for that.
Well, we're glad to do that, and I hope you listen whenever you get a chance.
Every Saturday. And I just wanted to ask you, this has been ran by George. This has been ran by Art. They've done shows on it. I don't think I've ever heard your take on this. The 9/11 conspiracy.
This
is something I've wondered about you. I was just wondering, because for me, I know I drive my girlfriend crazy. I'm a conspiracy theory nut. I mean, it's all about the conspiracy with me. Do you see a conspiracy in that?
Well, I mean, first of all, well, let's be more specific. There is a conspiracy that's alleged, but the conspiracy is alleged amongst Al-Qaeda Osama bin Laden and the terrorists who come largely from Saudi Arabia. I mean, there is a conspiracy, no doubt, or it wouldn't have happened. Now, do you mean by the conspiracy with capital C, some sort of U.S. governmental conspiracy to bring down the World Trade Center?
Well, and yes, that, and even more in depth, the entire Pentagon thing, which to me, now, what size was the plane that hit the Pentagon? Was that a 37?
Well, I've seen the video examination of the size of the hole versus the size of the plane. But you know, I guess, I'm sort of a victim of having, I would think, too much information here. I mean, I've spoken with reporters who were covering it, and they're, I mean, I would have to turn around and call them liars for having, you know, seen what they said they saw, which was a plane inside of the Pentagon. And I'm not prepared to do that.
Well, regardless, a lot of people died, and it was a horrible thing. And
yeah,
whether the truth will be uncovered, we probably will never know.
But what do you think the truth is? That, and this is really important, because part of a conspiracy must always be the cover-up of the conspiracy. And the problem with the Pentagon story is this didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened by a highway. And so you have all of those people that saw the plane going into it. You have all of those people who saw the plane sticking out of it, or going, you know, or the remnants of the plane being brought from it. So what do you do with that information? And I really mean this sincerely to you. How does that figure into the conspiracy?
Well, with me, I mean, the other night on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, George Norrie had on a guest who spoke of going all the way back to Roosevelt, of how basically Pearl Harbor was allowed to kind of get us into a war that was strongly disapproved by the American people with Hitler.
Right.
And there's been a lot of reports. Alex Jones been on the show many times, and he backs up with a lot of facts. And to me personally, there's a lot of physics laws, it seems like, being broken with not just the Pentagon, but with the Trade Center, and at the rate that those buildings fell. And then you have a building, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, in Madrid, that burned for hours and hours and is still standing. But it just seems like once I try to wrap my mind around the fact that, well, you know,
right,
what, terrorists may have done it, then it just kind of, I get discouraged. And I'm just trying to see the inside.
No, I think these are fair questions. But if I could, I would suggest to you that part of the idea of asking really good questions is being open to the really good answers. And part of that problem that sometimes comes into it from a conspiracy mindset, and I'm not questioning how you're deducing this, because I think you're doing the right thing by asking these good questions, but part of that has to be really looking for answers as opposed to just more questions. Because if that's all we're doing is just continuing to throw out more questions and questions and questions until there can't be any answers, then it wasn't a sincere inquiry. And you look at the World War II thing. I mean, I've always been fascinated with this idea about whether or not we let, you know, Pearl Harbor happen. And can I say that I think that there's some really good arguments made that if we had wanted to get America into the European theater, there are other ways that are more expeditious than allowing Americans to die on Pearl Harbor and declaring war against the Japanese.
Yes, sir.
I mean, we opened ourselves up immediately to a disadvantageous situation, a two-theater war. A war in two theaters. Why not, if we were trying to rig something to get America into what was at the moment then perhaps an unpopular war in Europe, there seemed to be other ways to do that than to get into a war with Japan. But you know what? I mean, I think you're asking really good questions. Just be open to really good answers, and we'll leave it there for now and find out where you're going to take us for the rest of this half hour for Open Lines. I'll never know. Until you do it, coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we got a full boat of calls for the rest of this half hour. We're going open lines until the top of the hour. And Rebecca's been on the wild card line for a while. Let's grab her before too late. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. Where are you going to take us?
Well, actually, I had a question originally for your guest prior, but I'm sure that you could probably answer it with the amount of information that you probably have heard over the course of the years. I wanted to know, I noticed that I hear a lot of calls about how the extraterrestrials or space visitors always seem to end up going into the center of, like, the country or further in away from the waters. And I was wondering why that they might do something like that where, I mean, because I am calling from Florida, but, I mean, because we're kind of, like, hanging out here. Wouldn't they be predominantly populating this area more than the other parts of the country where they're more accessible to being seen?
You're talking about the coasts? I mean, the major cities along the coasts? And why do they go to places like rural Arkansas?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, remember, too, I mean, first of all, that idea of them being allergic to water is kind of the premise of the movie. I don't want to give away the ending. I'll give away the ending. But he talks about that there were visitors here that are water-based, and that there's lots of people. He refers to them as the Neptunians, and that they have their ships and their bases are all in water. So I don't know that it's all that they stay away from water. I think if you really want to wonder about the major city thing, there's been plenty of sightings over New York, and there've been lots of UFO sightings around Florida and around the Gulf Coast in major population centers. Certainly Phoenix was no small city. So, I mean, I think there's a history of that, right? I mean, there's a history of it happening. Just, I think if you're talking about some of these encounters that happen in the rural areas, if you didn't want to be seen, then you would be more likely to go to a place where fewer people would see you. And then the larger question is, are they really coming here because they want to be seen, or are they coming here because they just want to find subtle and indirect ways of communicating?
Well, yeah, I was thinking like the same way that they might want to kind of like incorporate themselves into society. You think that they would come in under as much limited radar as possible, and coming in usually from like an ocean side or a Gulf side, you know, and coming up to a coastline and kind of like working their way into, like, because there's some areas in Florida, I drive them all, and, you know, through the forest, the national forest and stuff, you hear that, I mean, easily I'm driving along in the middle of the night, and you're sitting there going, wow, now this is like something out of a movie that you would see, you know, your UFO would be hopping down the middle of the roadway, you know, and instead something else jumps out and scares the bejeebies out of me, but, you know.
Like what?
Still,
like what jumps out? Like what jumps out and scares you?
It was a coyote.
Oh,
I don't want to hit anything, so I like swerve and miss everything. But I mean, you know, it was just, you know, you kind of have that mindset, because I listen to you guys like all the time, especially driving late at night.
Sure.
And we're always in these really back road areas where there's no lights, there's lots of trees, and there's moonlight, and it's just kind of, you know, I'm thinking, I was like, you know, well, why not pop down here in the Ocala National Forest?
Right. Well, it's a fair, well, if you'd like to invite them, I mean, I keep saying I'm ready. I'd love to go. And
I'm very curious.
And I've been also been told that the more you want to do it, the less likely you will be to do it. That they only want to take the reluctant. So maybe you have to try a little reverse psychology and start saying, no, don't take me. And see whether that works. Thank you, Rebecca. I appreciate the thought. It's an interesting idea. Of course, it's a age-old question. But before we consider an action, we have to consider the motive behind the action, and we'll leave it there. West of the Rockies, Jim is on Coast to Coast AM. Jim?
Hello, Ian. I've got a real creepy story here that gives me the creeps when I think about it. Short time back, why, a dear friend of mine, Shane, was building a museum building for me, and I've got several antique cars in there and stuff, and I needed a place to put them. And anyway, he lives on Glade Park, which is above the Colorado National Monument. Now, have you ever seen the monument?
No, I don't think I ever have.
Great sandstone cliffs, and some of the car ads were made up there where they set a car on a big monolith.
Oh, sure. Right. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, like Jeep commercials and stuff.
Yes, uh-huh. Well, anyway, the story goes is he was telling me this one day when he was building my museum, and he said they live right there beside a big canyon, and it's the border of the Colorado National Monument, but it's actually in, you know, his property right there. And they don't have lights. They have kerosene lamps, and they live pretty primitive, really, because he believes that way, you know, and being real religious. And so anyway, they all went to bed one night, and probably about 11 or 12, why the girl was in her bed doing her homework by a kerosene lamp, but she saw this little light way down the canyon, and there's no roads down there, and she kept seeing it, and it spooked her, so she turned the kerosene light off down to the bottom and watched it, and it flew right up this canyon, and it was red, and it went right in the window and landed right on her stomach, and she screamed bloody murder, and her dad come running in there, and the thing flew right back out. And of course, you know, being religious, he thinks it was the devil. And, you know, I just, it gave me the creeps when he was telling me about it, because I know he's not, you know, he's a very religious man and an honest man. And
what do you think it was?
Well, I think it might have been one of those probes that, you know, a little robotic type of a thing or something, you know.
Why would it have run?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it has intelligence or something. I don't know. I didn't make those things, so I really...
Oh, yeah, I understand. No, I just didn't know whether it... what his impression was of it. That did he scare it away with his presence being there, or was there something else that he had done which forced it to...
Well, I think when she screamed, maybe that would have scared it. I don't know, but it... You know, it didn't break the window and went right through the glass. That's what is so strange. And
have they changed anything about what they do in that cabin?
No. They still live there right now. And
no return visit?
Pardon?
And no return visit?
I haven't talked to him for a while because that was when he was building my building. And
sure. But, hey, by the way, did you hear the Batmobile is for sale?
No, I didn't.
The original Batmobile, and it's only $16,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's very discouraging to me that the real old, very valuable cars. I have a Jewett. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I have not.
Made by Page Detroit Motor Company, and Harry Jewett was the owner of that company. And anyway, if you look at, there's only three of them.
How about that?
And I suppose I couldn't get any more than $15,000 at the very most out, you know, and it's
really
just discouraging to me when a 57 Chevrolet fell at auction on the Barrett Jackson thing for $80,000, you know.
Right. Yeah, that goes to show you maybe you need to do something to raise the profile of the Jewett, you know, kind of like what they did with the Tucker. And suddenly those Tuckers got very valuable, didn't they?
Yeah, they sure did. They, you know, maybe it's somebody needs to make a movie about Page Detroit Motors. But I also have a 40 gram shark nose that looks very much like that Batmobile, the grandpa Batmobile, you know.
Well, I'd hang on to them. You never know when they're going to be valuable again. And thanks and good luck with that. And thanks for taking us again into interesting places. Here we go, from the dark, creepy interior of Florida to the National Forest, and a visit from what could have been a probe. Never know where we're going to go next with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Wrapping up the rest of the calls as we go around the country and around North America on Coast to Coast AM with some open lines. We'll start on the wild card line with Tim. Tim, where are you going to take us?
Hi, Ian. I'm going to take you to Riley Martin.
Good.
All right. I got a question. I heard Riley Martin one time on the Howard Stern show, and Riley admitted that he smoked crack cocaine.
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, he smoked crack cocaine. But I was wondering, I wonder if his past drug habits could allowed him to hallucinate what he saw. I'm not denying that he said he saw these things, you know, like...
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't even know that he did that. And I don't even know... I mean, I can't... I wouldn't comment on that in a factual basis because that... I mean, that's a crime, and so... That would be for me to confirm some sort of crime had been committed. I just don't have knowledge of that. It wouldn't be right for me to begin to speculate about something like that without making it sound like it really actually did happen. And I don't know that it happened. I mean, I can take your word for it that that's what he said. It's going to be interesting for him to be on the show. Why do you think Howard Stern is so interested in him?
Because I guess of his life and the way he is. I mean, when I heard him on the show, it was funny. It was great. It was fascinating.
I mean, why was it funny?
I mean, sometimes we'll goof on him, but he's like, when he speaks to the audience, when he speaks to Howard, he's honest and he's upfront. Just like tonight he was.
Okay.
I liked it a lot.
Good. I appreciate that. Thank you. And if you ever get a chance to talk to him, you can ask him that question. Let's go to the international line where Ron is hanging on Coast to Coast AM. Ron?
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Good. What do you think?
Great to have you back, actually, after your absence. You were sorely missed.
Thank you. Where are you?
In Toronto.
Oh, a tasty Canadian. we're glad to have you. So where are you going to take us?
First off, just a comment on Riley. I, too, have had some exposure to him through Howard. And, indeed, he's done a little time. But, irrespective of that fact, I find him amusing. But beyond that, I don't think he has an awful lot of credibility, given the fact, I guess somebody phoned in to Howard's show and stated that he actually purchased some sort of pass for the mothership or something like that off his website. So I have to sort of wonder about one's credibility if they're engaging in that kind of commerce.
Well, if nothing else, for the novelty of having the pass, you know, I mean, this.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess if you guarantee that you'll be able to use it, that'd be a different story. But, I mean, I can think of a few, you know, seniors at my high school that sold freshmen, you know, elevator passes and the freshmen bought it, but couldn't really use it.
Right. on another topic, I have a Master of Divinity as well from the University of Toronto at Trinity College. And I was just wondering if you've ever been exposed or heard of... Tom Harper.
No, I don't think I have.
Oxford man, used to be a professor of Greek and New Testament studies at Wycliffe College at U of T. He's written just a gamut of books. His latest is called The Pagan Christ. And it's, I just wanted to get sort of your, I think he'd make a great guest, number one.
Okay.
Secondly, I just wanted to get your opinion on sort of his premise that, basically he, as anybody that studied divinity seriously knows, it's sort of hard to discern the historical Jesus as opposed to, you know, all the myths and other gods or worship, I'm at a loss for words here, or other types of religiosities that were practice previous to Jesus. He sort of maintains that the whole Christian message is basically borrowed from these previous religions.
You're talking about the Mithron and the Dionysian and the...
Absolutely.
Right. This has been around since the very beginning in a lot of ways. And I guess that part of that... See, I look at this from another standpoint. There's a lot of people who look at the sayings of Jesus and they see in him a strong echo of a rabbinical background that would have been very separate from the so-called pagan, and that's what they hear in his messages, perhaps less original than Christians might think, and that it was more reflective of sort of traditional rabbinical thought. And so, I mean, I guess it could kind of go either way, depending on which way you're looking at it. I mean, I can see some of the elements that people are talking about when it comes to what they call previous man-god type traditions.
Well, he's adamant in his contention that, just you know, this doesn't undermine. I mean, he's certainly not a fundamentalist by any stretch.
No, that would be a hard fit, I think, for most fundamentalists.
But he certainly maintains that this does not undermine his faith or his belief in God. It merely illustrates that, you know, I guess he sort of feels the same way I do, that even if there was not a historical Jesus, the fact that message is out there or the idea behind what he stood for is, you know, the golden rule or what have you,
sure,
is out there and is maintained, or is at least attempted to be maintained by most people,
well,
is in and of itself sort of maybe proof of a higher being or a purpose to life.
Well, let's I mean, I can't settle that here in the 2 minutes that we have left, but I will say that there are lots of people who have written on that subject, and I'd be happy to take a look at that work, too. I always find it an interesting, especially when the research is done well, and that's tricky because a lot of it's not done very well. It's very compelling. Let's go east of the Rockies. Susan on Coast to Coast AM. Susan?
Hi.
Hi, where are you going to take us?
Well, I have a comment about your previous guest. I know I'm going to just cut it real short. First of all, I'm a Christian, and the guest that you had, Mr. Martin, evolution, that just doesn't do it for me. You know, my Bible says that I was created in God's likeness and image, and I don't believe that my God sits on his throne going, eep, eep, eep. But I'm taking a leap of faith. I know you're in the seminary. I assume you're a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that? I know it's your job, but how do you handle most of what he said? Because
he's a human being.
Okay.
And it's not my job as a person of faith to invalidate another human being based on their ideas. And I don't do it when it comes to denominational disagreements. Not all Christians agree on what you just said, right? I mean, that lots of people believe that they have faith and they also believe in evolution, and they don't see these two things as being, you know, difficult to hold together at the same time. Are we to dismiss them? And how far do we keep going where we're just going to stop talking to people just because we don't like what they're saying? What does that prove about us?
Well, I agree with you there, but
okay.
This guy seems way far out.
All right. Well, who's not too far out for you? Who's just right?
I don't have an answer to that question right now, and I know you've been the last couple of minutes. So.
Well, when you have the answer to that question, then you'll know the answer to the question you asked me. How can I do it? It's because from all appearances, this is a guy who wants to be taken sincerely. He wants to be listened to, and that's my job, is as a person to just be with them in what they are doing. It's not for me to go sentence to sentence judging them as good or bad or accepted or not accepted. So we'll just leave it there for now and say that I wish we could have gotten to everybody. There's many more people hanging on open lines. But it's interesting to see that Riley Martin continued on in the conversation into open lines. And I thank everybody who will email it eventually. Trying to get caught up with the email this week. I'll do a better job of it, I promise. In the meantime, George has an interesting show coming up next week on nanotechnology. You got to be listening for that. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett.